Welcome to the Casey Kohar Show, a celebration of words. And I'm delighted to have back for the sixth time Michael Conley. We'll be discussing Mr. Conley's new novel, The Brass Verdict, recently published by Little Brown. It's Mr. Conley's 20th book. First of all, Michael, thanks for taking time to talk with us today.
I'm glad to be back. Thank you.
Michael, with The Brass Verdict, you write in a note that you wrote that in 1993, really the seed for The Brass Verdict was planted. And if you would, tell the listeners and the readers a bit about the genesis of The Brass Verdict and your history as a writer that led to this book.
Well, I guess it comes out of my desire to make all my stories connect on some way. I mean, I do write a series of books about the detective Harry Bosch, but every now and then I write something else. But there's usually small connections between all the books, and so I'm always thinking as I'm writing books that, about how to connect them. So a few years ago when I was writing a book that became The Lincoln Lawyer, and I had to come up with a character name, for example, I kind of went back to what I'd already written. And in way back in 93, my second book, there's a reference to Harry Bosch's kind of long-lost father, the father he didn't know, and his name was Mickey Haller, and he was a big defense lawyer in Los Angeles in the 50s and 60s. And so I took that name, meaning that the Lincoln lawyer, Mickey Haller Jr., was the son of Harry's father, making them half-brothers. And so that was a big seed, I guess you could say, I planted in Lincoln Lawyer, taking it over from 1993. And this book, The Brass Verdict, is where I guess that you could say that seed grows into a plant or something and is definitely explored.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really enjoyed this book, and I had the sense as I was reading it that this was a book that you enjoyed writing. And if you would, Mickey Haller is told from the point of view of Mickey Haller. And if you would, tell me how you kind of balanced having Mickey tell the story but having Harry Bosch be a presence in the novel as well.
Sure. The book is no doubt a Mickey Haller story. It's first-person Mickey. It's his narration. And this follows the Lincoln lore. That was how I wrote the Lincoln lore, and I wanted to do the same here. Harry Bosch is a big part of this book. I would not say he's equal to Mickey. It's Mickey's story. But in several instances through the book, they cross paths. And what was, from the writing standpoint, what was really exhilarating and fun about writing this book was writing about Harry Bosch through the first-person eyes of Mickey, through a cop viewed through the eyes of a cynical defense attorney. And so to me, it was, even though I've written about Harry Bosch 12, 13, or 14 times before, I was getting a new take on this old character. And that was something that really helped, you know, keep me plugged in and you know, kind of raring to go every morning when it was time to go to work.
Mm-hmm. And, Michael, I know when you write each book that you want it to be a standalone book, and I know you put a lot of conscious effort into not telling too much of the backstory when you're writing your new novel. And how did you deal with that in terms of dealing with Mickey Haller's backstory, Harry Bosch's life, and then bringing them together in a way that didn't really slow down the plot, which I think you did, you know, an excellent job of?
Well, it's kind of strange because here we're talking about it, and I think, you know, the astute or longtime reader of my work, it's no surprise who Mickey Haller is because there's been references. And so I have this dilemma. Do I talk about what should be obvious to people who have been riding along with me, or do I try to keep everything a secret? And I really don't think, A, that it ruins anything if you know that Mickey and Harry are half-brothers. And B, it's very hard to talk about the book because the book is about Mickey's discovery. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a one-sided thing here. Harry is older by about 15 years, and he knew who his father was.
Mm-hmm.
But Harry was his father's secret. So Mickey grew up not knowing there was somebody out there named Harry Bosch and he was related to.
Mm-hmm.
So one brother knew it, one didn't. And it's about the one who didn't, Mickey, finding out that he has a brother. And, you know, that actual moment is very, very late in the book, but it's not, I don't think it's a spoiler or a giveaway.
No.
to talk about it.
Right. And one of the things I really like with you telling the story from the point of view of Mickey Haller is that Mickey has, we come to understand some of the demons that Mickey has in his life, which we learned about in The Lincoln Lawyer. But we also, there's kind of a parallel with Harry Bosch and his life, they both kind of like to keep to themselves, although Mickey's probably a more outgoing person. So did you have that in mind when you started the novel, or was that something that kind of came to you as you were writing it?
No, I mean, I thought, like, you know, I have an interesting opportunity here. These guys are connected by blood, but they're really, you know, flip sides of the same coin. And what is that coin? I mean, I wanted it to be flip sides of the city, flip sides of the justice system. I mean, one's a cop, one, you know, works for the prosecution, one is the defense attorney. You can't get more opposite than that. It turns out they live on the same mountain that runs right through the middle of Los Angeles, but they're on different sides, so they have different views. And these are just kind of, it's kind of a repetition of a metaphor where you kind of reinforce themes in the book by constantly kind of showing them as flip sides of the same coin.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something, you know, I knew I should try to do, you know, from day one of writing this book. And I think I did it in some obvious ways and some subtle ways.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Michael, if you would, tell us a little bit about Walter Elliott. I'm wondering, I know you've been working on screenplays and have written screenplays, and how did the character of Walter Elliott evolve in your mind, let's say, you know, maybe 5 years ago, and then in terms of how you would write it now with your experience, with your real-life experience you've had?
Oh, I mean, how did he evolve? It's kind of hard to say. I mean, I've had some experiences dealing with producers. I've met a few heads of studios, and but, you know, I still have a very peripheral relationship of Hollywood, but I think it's still close enough that I can observe and talk about it, and I'm also get in positions where I hear anecdotal stories about big shots in Hollywood. And, you know, it's hard to live in Los Angeles or spend any kind of time there without being influenced by this or not seeing this. It's the industry you most see in that city. And, you know, so I think Elliott is drawn from some of my experiences, very, very, a few of them, I'd say, but also a lot of my observations and stories I've picked up. And he's basically a, you know, arrogant Hollywood big shot, a lot, you know, which is, I guess, determined by how many homes you own and how much money you have. And he's charged with a pretty serious murder, and I guess that's the center arc of the story is his case, and Mickey inherits it, and he has to deal with the fact that I don't personally like this guy, but it looks like he's innocent.
Mm-hmm. And I know in some of our previous conversations, you've told me that Joseph Wambaugh had an influence on you as a writer, and when I finished the book, I thought that Joseph Wambaugh would like the character of Walter Elliott very much, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I've been very lucky in that I was heavily influenced and, you know, mentored by his words. I'm talking about Joe Wambaugh,
mm-hmm.
you know, going back to the 70s. And then late in the 90s, I got the chance to meet him, and I've spent some time with him. He's now published at the same publishing house as me. And so in the last few years, we've crossed paths a lot, and we've been able to talk, and a lot of the stories that we talk about are his Hollywood stories. I mean, he's made some great films, had some interesting stories, and possibly more interesting stories than his years in publishing. And, yeah, you know, like probably some of the formation of Elliott, you know, came from hearing stories from Joe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Michael, as we've talked in the past, an important part of a crime novel, or really any most literature in general, is an arresting beginning. And the novel opens in 1992, and the first chapter is fairly short, but I think you did an excellent job of hooking the reader and bringing us into the novel. And I'm wondering, did you work on that beginning several times, or was that something that just kind of flowed when you started writing it?
No, I was really looking for a short intro that would set the stage of, you know, Mickey Haller's personality. You can't rely on that people have read Lincoln Lawyer, and which, you know, would be, you know, kind of like a primer on Mickey Haller. But you can't rely on that, so I wanted to have something short that would hopefully hook the reader in, but also tell them something about their narrator. And I think it's a honest but very cynical view of the justice system through the eyes of somebody who's worked in the trenches for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You're listening to the Casey Coar Show, a celebration of words. My guest today is Michael Connelly. We're discussing The Brass Verdict, which is recently published by Little Brown. It's Mr. Connelly's 20th novel, and I think his best. And Michael, if you would, the role of the media has changed a lot over the last 5 to 10 years, and with Court TV, and I like the way you utilize the publicity angle for the attorneys involved. And if you would talk a little bit about, I really like the character Julie Favreau, and there's kind of this, I really enjoy learning about the trial process that you write about. If you would talk about Julie Favreau and how that actually works with the juries and the attorneys.
Sure. Well, Julie is somebody who would be hired by attorneys to study faces and responses during jury selection. And she could, you know, be an advisor. She acts as an advisor, kind of a hidden advisor, in fact, to Mickey during that process. And when I was researching this book, I went to a trial with a friend of mine, and I didn't have the time to watch the whole trial, but I went during jury selection, and I kind of became fascinated with how he was picking jurors, and he had a chart on his on the defense table and what he was looking for. And you know, I wish I could tell you, and I say this all the time, that I'm like a creative genius, man, and I came up with all this stuff. And really, some of the questions, some of the trick questions the lawyer asked, some of the takes on the potential jurors that, like, Julie has or even Mickey has, in many cases, they're word-for-word things I wrote down in a notebook when I was sitting in a real courtroom watching a real case. And I guess if I have a skill, it becomes, then where do you put that stuff?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to me, that section of the book is one of my favorites, but it's also one of the biggest gambles, because if when you think legal thriller, you think of, you know, a trial, you think of witnesses and trying to trick people and so forth. And I spent many, many pages just on picking a jury. And to me, it's just, you know, it comes out of what I do. I got fascinated when I was watching a jury being picked. So the challenge to me was, okay, well, then write a section of a book that is just as fascinating. And hopefully I've done that.
Mm-hmm. Michael, one thing I always like to ask you and before I let you go, I'd like to know, when you finish the Brass Verdict, and now that it's out and it'll be out in the bookstores and available online, now becomes the fun part where people get to read your new book, what are you happiest about with as a novelist and as a writer with what you accomplished in the Brass Verdict?
Well, on one hand, I think I've set something up that I can go back to, and that's this relationship with Haller and Bosch. I think this story is complete in what it shows about, but it also can be a springboard for other stories. And so I kind of finished this book with this kind of internal excitement that, you know, down the road, these two are going to be back together again, and maybe they'll be at odds, or maybe they'll be on the same page. I don't really know. I don't have the plans. I just know it's out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so anytime you finish one book and you know you have another one in your back pocket, that is a great feeling, because a lot of times that's the hardest part of this job is coming up with ideas you know that can go the distance, that can be a complete book. So that was good. I like that. It's funny, I'm going to tell you things that probably readers won't really gravitate towards, but, you know, one of the things I liked the best about this was the relationship between Mickey and his daughter, and it's not a big part of this book. It kind of
mm-hmm.
comes in and out.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about him trying to reclaim family and realizing how important that is. And so he's working on his ex-wife, and he's trying to improve the relationship with his young daughter. All the while, he has, like, the high pressure of a case and a possible murderer out there looking for him. All kinds of stuff are happening to him, but this is still an important part of his life, and I like the way that I finessed that into the story.
Yeah, I agree. And again, I don't want to give anything away in the book, but there are some scenes where Mickey has to make decisions and on conflicts that I thought were really well done. Michael, I'd like to congratulate you on the Brass Verdict. I think it's going to be another winner for you. And I'd also like to put a plug in for an event that's going to take place in Orlando, Florida on November 20th. That's where the show originates from now. And you're going to be at Urban Think Bookstore, which is on 625 East Central Boulevard in Orlando. And it's going to be November 20th, a reading and signing. So I'd like everybody in Orlando to come out and support Urban Think as well as Michael Conley. And if you would, tell us a little bit about the tour you're getting ready to do and what kind of information people can get on your website, michaelconley.com.
Well, you can get everything there. You know, where I'm going to be every day, what time, addresses, everything. You know, it's a difficult tour. I hit, you know, every city a new day. It's kind of like that Johnny Cash song, "I've Been Everywhere, Man." I kind of feel that way.
Yeah.
But something you mentioned earlier is really true. This is the fun part. I mean, I wrote this thing. Writing it is not. It's fun, but it's also work, and it takes. It takes time and it takes effort. And now I kind of can sit back and see how it does. I get to talk about it. The first few days, you know, the book's just out. No one's read it yet. But towards the latter half of the tour, what always happens is you have people in the audience who have already read it and have questions and comments and so forth. And that becomes, you know, really interesting. I think by the time I roll into Urban Think, the discussion should be pretty interesting.
Good. Well, Michael, I look forward to meeting you on the 20th at Urban Think, and I guarantee you we'll have a packed house.
All right, good.
And we're gonna fill the place. So, best of luck with the tour, safe travels, and I look forward to seeing you on the 20th and talking with you the next book when it comes out. You've been listening to the Casey Kohar Show, a celebration of words. My guest today has been Michael Conley. We've been discussing The Brass Verdict, and I look forward to seeing everyone in Orlando on November 20th. At the Urban Think Bookstore, which is on 625 East Central Boulevard in downtown Orlando. Thank you.